Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about this so-called fiscal cliff. This is the combination of tax hikes and spending cuts that will kick in automatically at the end of the year if the two parties can't come to an agreement on tax hikes and spending cuts, is what I understand. And what's the latest?
Well, I think NPR has done a really good job of laying out the details and the ramifications of the fiscal cliff. There's all kinds of bad things that will happen, and the CBO is predicted, as well as lots of other economists now have predicted, that if we don't do anything and we go over the so-called cliff, we're going to trigger a recession for the country, and that's not good. So what's happening right now is there are lots of discussions going on behind the scenes. Of course, the history has been that it's in the Senate where deals get done. Law is really made in the Senate more so than the House. But I'd say right now the discussions have been mostly with the President and the Speaker of the House and some of the Senate leadership. So there are discussions, there are talks. You know, I think this thing's going to have to fall apart one or two times before it actually gets put back together. And I think, selfishly, I would like to get this wrapped up by Christmas, but we have until New Year's. So I'm hoping that we can get it done next week, but that's a very, very short time frame.
Yeah. I saw, I believe it was a conservative blog that actually advocated allowing the sequestration, or what's called the fiscal cliff, to happen, as opposed to accepting a deal offered by the president, which they said was a bad deal. And they're saying no deal is better than a bad deal.
Well, there's a lot of these either real liberal or real conservative people who are saying, let's just go over the cliff if we don't get our way. And to me, that's very short-sighted. That's very, selfish in the way they look at things. We need to do what's right for the country, and I think there are negative ramifications if we do go over the cliff, so we need to be very careful about that. I will say this, that some of the Republican senators in the last several days have grabbed me in the halls and down on the floor of the Senate, and they said, Mark, let me ask you this. If we don't get to some resolution on the fiscal cliff, do you think the president will blame us? And I think the answer is yes. He'll go all around the country blaming Republicans for this, right or wrong. That's just the way it's going to be. And the polls are indicating that, you know, the Republicans, Americans feel that Republicans would be more to blame than the president because they feel like he's already put some things on the table. But regardless of that, I think the political pressure is to try to get something done, like I said, hopefully by Christmas, but if not, by the first of the year. And, you know, I'm sure some of this is going to involve next year. We're going to try to extend some things into next year and try to, have a meaningful process to get everything done at some point next year.
Well, I know tax reform is one of the goals that both parties say they support, but again, the problem is agreeing on the specifics. There's this discussion about whether there can be enough tax loopholes undone to take care of much of the problem, whether there should be an increase in rates on the upper income levels.
Yeah, and this has been one of the problems, is there hasn't been a lot of specificity on what people are willing to do. The president is coming out and saying, look, let's raise the rates on the top earning individuals. Okay, so let's do that. Well, and go back to the rates before President George W. Bush came in. Okay, so that's one thing. That is a specific. And then John Boehner says, well, let's, we'll do loopholes and we'll do this and we'll make some changes and that's going to add up to X number of billion dollars. Well, he hasn't been real specific about what he's willing to do. And until we get a little more definition on it, it's going to be hard to get to an agreement until we know what we're agreeing to. So, this is, to me, part of the posturing and part of the dance that goes on. In my way of thinking, it's not necessary, but it is what's going on. I'm cautiously optimistic that, we will get to some sort of agreement. And I just think that, at this point, everything should be on the table. But we should be getting to specifics at this point.
Well, then we hear talk about cutting deductions, and that gives people a lot of pause because cutting deductions like home mortgage and charitable giving, does that have a greater impact on middle-class taxpayers than those in the higher brackets?
You know, it really does, and this is something that we've bounced around here for a couple of years now. Simpson-Bowles brought this up. that there should be, instead of a mortgage deduction, it should be a mortgage credit, and that you should limit the amount of charitable deduction that people can claim. I actually don't necessarily agree with those two things on Simpson Bowles. I mean, we need to look at that, and again, everything should be on the table, and we should consider it. But I think in the end, I think the mortgage deduction and the charitable deduction are so important, and like you said, they impact so many Americans. I mean, you have a lot of middle-class people in this country that tithe. You have a lot of middle-class people in this country that have mortgage payments, and that's basically the only way they can make it all work is to get the mortgage deduction. So let's put it on the table. Let's talk about it. But I think those two things probably should stay either completely as is and go untouched, or at least if they're modified at all, it'd be very slight modification that wouldn't impact the middle class.
And of course, defense cuts are a significant part of this debate. Are defense cuts, these defense cuts they're talking about, a big concern? How much will they impact our military readiness?
Oh, yeah, they're a big concern. You know, we have to remember that our industry, our industrial base in the country, is also intertwined with our defense industry. That's not to say that every single manufacturer would be adversely impacted, but there are literally thousands of manufacturers around the country that would be impacted by sharp defense cuts. Mm-hmm. With that said, though, we have to remember that federal budget being the way it is, you're going to see some cuts in defense. I don't think there's any way to avoid that. And this is going to be part of the pain, part of what we're all going to have to go through. You're going to see cuts in defense. You're going to see cuts in popular things like education and Head Start and things like that. It's just going to be hard. And also, you're going to see pressure to increase revenue. So, yeah, I would look at it like this, Mark. I would say that basically, as a nation, in the big picture, as a nation, we've been living beyond our means for a long time, and we can't do this anymore. We're on an unsustainable path, so we're going to have to make some changes. The changes are going to be painful. They're going to be politically difficult, but we're going to have to do it for the long-term future of the country.
Well, now, when we talk about defense cuts, what's going on right now with the 188th Fighter Wing over in the western part of our state? They're looking at a big change in their mission.
Yeah, they are, and the Air Force basically wants to take the A-10s away from Fort Smith, which actually makes no sense. They really cannot give us a good reason on why they want to do that. It's not a budget issue, because those that A-10 unit is the most cost-effective, the most efficient unit in the entire system. They deployed twice. They're always top of the charts on readiness, and they're top of the charts on how they test out on everything. So it makes no sense why that one would go. And I think that there are some politics involved here, but not like presidential politics. It's more politics within the military. They want to keep one flying mission per state. Well, the problem is that the 188th in Fort Smith is better, and it proves year in, year out to be better, more prepared, more cost-effective than units in other states. And I think at this point, given the budget constraints, you can't go rely on this one flying mission per state. That's political. We need to focus on military readiness and preparedness. We need to be stretching those dollars. So Senator Bozeman and Congressman Womack and myself and all of us, the whole delegation, we're all fighting hard to keep those A-10s, those close air support airplanes, those warthogs, they call them, in Fort Smith. And right now, you know, their future's uncertain. We don't know exactly. In fact, the Air Force now is telling us they want to get rid of the entire A-10 program. So we don't know what that means. We don't know when they're talking about. Are they talking 1 year, 5 years, 10 years? What are they talking about? So we're working very hard to try to get some definition on that.
Yeah, we know those are some amazing planes that have served very well on the battlefield as tank busters and have, you know, just performed admirably.
They really have. They've been a huge lifesaver for American troops on the ground in Afghanistan and in Iraq. It's an ugly airplane. They're older. You know, most of them we have now were built like in the mid-'80s type thing, but they've all been retrofitted and upgraded.
And they've been effective.
They've been extremely effective. And they are, I mean, I'm telling you, as those soldiers on the ground, you can ask people in your community who've been to Iraq and Afghanistan, they will tell you that they don't have a better friend out there in the battlefield than that A-10. Right. So That's why I think we need to keep them, especially considering that the nature of warfare, we're going to be going into tighter places, and it's going to be more what they call asymmetrical, where we're going to be in places where you need some close air support. But, you know, a big fighter, one of these supersonic fighters, doesn't necessarily work. You need something that can really prowl like those A-10s can.
Yeah. Well, we've gotten some good rains in our area recently, and I understand that's going to help the situation on the lower Mississippi as far as barge traffic. But the drought in the upper Mississippi has really caused a major concern for barge traffic recently. It's such a critical area of trade. Is this still a serious situation?
It is a very serious situation. I was just in meetings yesterday and today with senators from Illinois and Michigan and Missouri and one or two other places up, you know, upstream from us, and they all talked about the Mississippi River and the problem that they're having up there, because basically they're sort of choked off trade-wise. You know, they have so much going up and down the river. They're up at the top end of it. They're having problems. We're having problems in the middle and the lower part of the river. So, yes, it's a big problem. And, you know, the Corps of Engineers manages the river, quite honestly. I think they're doing a good job. It's really just truly a matter of rainfall and getting enough water in the various tributaries and whatnot, and it's pretty rough out there right now.
Well, we still haven't gotten a new farm bill. What's going to happen with that?
Well, our friends in the House have not moved on the farm bill yet. There's some rumor circulating around there that they're going to try to get it done, and it may be part of an end-of-the-year deal. But I talked to a Republican congressman yesterday, 2 days ago, from Mississippi. He's pretty pessimistic that they're going to be able to get that done. So I don't know. That's up to the House leadership. I'm not even saying that they should pass the Senate bill. I don't want to be presumptuous and say that. But hopefully they'll pass something that looks like the Senate bill, you know, with some modifications. And, you know, they'll get something done by the end of the year. But, you know, agriculture is a huge industry, not just in Arkansas, but it's a huge industry for the entire nation. And the big problem in the Senate bill was the rice provisions. Hopefully they'll get those fixed in the House.
Well, we're beginning to run a little short on time. Wanted to get to this. You're helping to introduce a bill that's designed to help protect more children from the horrors of child abuse. Can you tell me a little bit more about this bill?
Well, this is something that we've, you know, been working on for a long time. It goes back to my attorney general days, where, you know, we want to protect kids against child abuse, and I'm working on it with several other senators, a bipartisan bill, try to do something on the federal level to, you know, make sure that we can do better about preventing child abuse and reporting child abuse, and you know, try to enhance penalties, things like that. So it's been a kind of a passion ever since I was in the Attorney General's office, just seeing some of the stuff we saw in that office. That'll make a believer out of you.
Well, I know you got short time left, and everybody's kind of focused on this fiscal cliff deal. What do you think you can get done in the remainder of this year, and then looking ahead to the first of next year?
You know, one of the things I'm working on that really hasn't made the news yet, because we really hadn't talked about it a lot, is I'm working on the filibuster reform problem in the Senate. One of my goals would be right now to lay the groundwork for a more productive Senate next year. We've had more filibusters than we've ever had in the history of the country in this last 2-year period. It's been unbelievable, you know, just how off the charts we've been in terms of, you know, people trying to be obstructionists and block things in the Senate. And, you know, right now it's the minority party as the Republicans, but the truth is the Democrats are just as guilty. They're just as guilty in different ways. There's a working group of senators, both Democrats and Republicans, that are trying to put something together. And actually, we are making progress. We're doing it quietly. We're not announcing it to anyone. But I'm hoping that, you know, in the next week or two, by the end of the year, certainly, we'll have some good news on that, and we'll set up, you know, set up for success for next year.
Now, what can we get it back to where you actually have to get up and read the dictionary again?
Yeah, the talking filibuster,
right.
Get up and read the rice recipes like
yeah.
My dad did one time. Yeah, that's actually a big part of the discussion is, you know, the old Mr. Smith goes to Washington,
yeah, exactly.
Filibuster. That doesn't exist anymore, mm-hmm. And that's mostly because of Senate practice and the abuses. And anyway, we're trying to get at that right now, and you want to do it in a way that definitely protects the minority. That's critical. We want to do that, and we want to protect individual senators' rights. But there's been so many abuses trying to move forward on that is a little tricky. But actually, we have some good proposals that we're working on, and I'm actually pretty optimistic that we're going to be able to find what we need to find and actually make the Senate more productive. And I think my goal there is the Senate is, like I said earlier, the Senate is really where it gets done in Washington, and it's also the window that the nation can look in and see law being made. It's not always pretty, but they can see law being made. They can see the debates. They can see us fussing at each other and having amendments and voting and all that down on the floor. And right now, when anyone turns on C-SPAN 2, all they get is a quorum call. And those are these filibusters that just never seem to end. So we're going to try to change that and make the Senate a better place next year.
All right. Well, I wanted to give you just a minute at the end here to say whatever you wanted to say as we go into the holiday season and Christmas is coming. Just give a little message to your constituents here.
Well, certainly I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a great new year and just a real happy holiday season. And especially I'd like for us to remember our men and women in uniform who are in places like Afghanistan and other places around the world serving this country, and also to our diplomatic corps. You know, it's not, you don't just have to be working, you know, for the Army or for the Air Force to serve the country. You can be working for the State Department or the Department of Commerce, Department of Agriculture around the world to do great things for this country. So we want to remember them. I know a lot of them will be away from their families this holiday season, and just remember them in our thoughts and prayers. And if we can help those families in any way, we should all do that.
All right. Senator Mark Pryor, Merry Christmas to you. Have
Thank
a great
you.
Holiday season, and we will talk to you next year.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Senator Mark Pryor joining us from his office in Washington this morning. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.